Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Malaba Giri Vardhahuri Yashodanandana Rajajana Ranjana Yashodanandana Rajajana Ranjana Yamunatera Banachari Jayarat Omadhova Kunjabihari Jayarat Omadhova Kunjabihari Gopijana Malaba Giri Vardhahuri Gopijana Malaba Giri Vardhahuri Yashodanandana Rajajana Ranjana Yamunatira Vanachari Yamunatira Vanachari Jayarat Madhava Kunjabihari Jayarat Madhava Kunjabihari Gopijan Tabalaba Kiri Vardati Gopijana Balaba Kiri Vardhahuri Yashodanandana Rajajana Ranjana Yamunatira Banachari Yamunatira Banachari Jai Hurad Omadava Kunjabihari Jai Radha Madhova Kunjabihari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa, Paravidakacharya, All Sutta, Sutta Shi, Shimad, His Divine Grace, Abhayachananabhaktivananda, Gosami, Maharishila Prabhupada ki jai, ISKCON, Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Anantakoti, Vaishnava, Vrinda ki jai, Namacharya, Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai, Prem se kaho, Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Gijaya Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopikamata Sayam Kund Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavanam Ki Jai Maturam Ki Jai Jagannatha Swami Ki Jai Yamunamai Ki Jai Shrimati Lalasi Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Gijaya Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Gaur All glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada ki jai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Gaur. So we are continuing with our Bhagavad Gita class, and now we will go to the Bhagavad Gita. So Om Gana Timirandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmiditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So we're reading from the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So we offer our respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened our eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while we were blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So we're continuing with text 46 of the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And so we're almost finished with the first chapter. We'll finish in the next day or two. So text 46, we're going to read it. Sanjayo vacha hivam mukva arjuna sankye ratopasta upavishat rishijasat sharam chapam shoka samvignamanasaha. Sanjaya uvacha, Sanjaya said, evam thus uktva, saying, Arjuna, the sankye in the battlefield, ratha of the chariot, upashte on the seat, upavishat sat down again, visrisha putting aside, sa sharam along with arrows, chapam the bow, shoka by lamentation, samvigna distressed, manasaha within the mind. Translation. Sanjaya said, Arjuna, having thus spoken on the battlefield, cast aside his bow and arrows and sat down on the chariot, his mind overwhelmed with grief. And as we mentioned before, it's all right for Arjuna to be sentimental, but it's not all right for him to give in to his sentimentality and do something that is against his best interest, the interests of society, and, of course, Krishna's interests. That's the trick. We have to control the mind with the intelligence. We gave that example yesterday of the chariot. The intelligence is the driver. The mind is the reins. The senses are the horses. The chariot is the body. And the passenger is good old us, the soul. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Let me just do one thing here. Mute all. Found out how to mute everybody. That's good. While observing the situation of his enemy, Arjuna stood up on the chariot, but he was so afflicted with lamentation that he sat down again, setting aside his bow and arrows. Such a kind and soft-hearted person in devotional service of the Lord is fit to receive self-knowledge. So that's the end of the chapter. We're going to end it today. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports, the first chapter of Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of observing the armies on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So we've ended, and now we'll continue with chapter 2, which is entitled The Contents of the Gita Summarize. So here in this particular chapter, Arjuna submits to Lord Krishna as his disciple, and Krishna begins his teachings to Arjuna by explaining the fundamental distinction between the temporary material body and the eternal spirit soul. The Lord explains the process of transmigration, the nature of selfless service to the Supreme, and the characteristics of a self-realized person, all there in this first, in this second chapter of the Gita. So we'll begin with the first verse of the second chapter. Sanjayo vacha tam tata kripaya vishtam ashru purna kulakshadham vishirantam idam vakyam uvacha marusudanaka. Sanjayo vacha, Sanjaya said, tam unto Arjuna tata thus kripaya, by compassion, avishtam, overwhelmed, ashru purna akula, full of tears, ikshanam, eyes, Vishit dantam, lamenting, idam, these vakyam words, Uvacha said, Madhu Sudana, the killer of Madhu. So, translation. Sanjaya said, seeing Arjuna full of compassion, his mind depressed, his eyes full of tears, Madhusudana Krishna spoke the following words. And Prabhupada explains the material compassion, lamentation and tears are all signs of ignorance of the real self. Compassion for the eternal soul is self-realization. The word Madhusudana is significant in this verse. Actually, let me just give us a brief explanation of that, utilizing an example that Srila Prabhupada gave, and that is the example of the bird in the cage. And we used to do this as a play during some of the Sunday feasts in ISKCON in the early days. Once upon a time, there was a bird in a cage. Not so remarkable. And what happened is the person who owned the bird and owned the cage, he spent all this time polishing the cage. He felt very attached to the cage. He was making sure it shone very nicely. But in doing so, he neglected the bird, and unfortunately, the bird died. So we used to do that as a play. In other words, someone would act as the owner of the bird, the owner of the cage, and he would actually be polishing, and gradually the bird would die of starvation. So that's us. Compassion for the eternal soul of self-realization. Lord Krishna, word Madhusudan is significant in this verse. Lord Krishna killed the demon Madhu, and now Arjuna wanted Krishna to kill the demon of misunderstanding that had overtaken him in the discharge of his duty. No one knows where compassion should be applied. Compassion for the dress of a drowning man is senseless. That's also another story or another play we used to do on Sunday. The play was a man is drowning. So one devotee acts like he's drowning in the ocean. Save me, save me, save me. And the other one jumps into the ocean, grabs the guy's coat or shirt, pulls it out and says, I've saved him. In the meantime, the guy drowns. A man fallen in the ocean of passions cannot be saved simply by rescuing his outward dress, the gross material body. One who does not know this and laments for the outward dress is called a shudra, or one who laments unnecessarily. Shudra. Another definition of shudra, which Prabhupada gave, was one who laments unnecessarily. Arjuna was a kshatriya, and this conduct was not expected from him. Lord Krishna, however, can dissipate the lamentation of the ignorant man, and for this purpose the Bhagavad Gita was sung by him. This chapter instructs us in self-realization by an analytical study of the material body and the spirit soul, as explained by the supreme authority, Lord Sri Krishna. This realization is possible when one works without attachment to fruitive results and is situated in the fixed conception of the real self. I guess I should unpack that. So, the only way you're going to become detached from fruitive results and situated in the fixed conception of the real self is you got to know what the conception of the fixed conception of the real self is. That's interesting. And the fixed conception of the real self, that's us, for those who don't know what that is Jivara Svarupa Hoy Nitya Krishna. That's us, that we're all servants of Krishna. That's fixed. It doesn't go away. It's our nature. No matter what you do, you can forget about your nature, like you can get amnesia, but you are who you are. Using a material example, let's say you have a particular mother, a particular father, a particular family, wife, husband, whatever. And you get amnesia. You forget. But that doesn't change the fact that that person is your mother, father, uncle, aunt, wife, husband, children. It's as simple as that. It just doesn't change the facts. So we are servants of Krishna. And of course, in the ultimate instance, in the spiritual realm, we have one of five different relationships with Krishna. We talked about rasa theology before. That's the servitude or the passive relationship, servitude, friendship, parental, or conjugal relationship. And that's fixed in our nature. That's who we are. We're like, example that I used before, we're like pieces of a puzzle that fit in a particular way. And if you try to force the puzzle pieces to fit in where they don't belong, you'll end up with a really awkward puzzle, and you'll probably break the piece in the meantime. Okay, so that's the fixed conception of the self. So in other words, you have to know who you are, maybe not specifically in the beginning, but, you know, I am a servant of Krishna, which doesn't change. And then you'll act properly. Then you'll act without consideration or attachment to fruit of results, because you understand everything belongs to Krishna. Ishvasham. This is from the Isopanishad. Ishvasham idam sarvam yad kincha tena jaktena bunjara magadha kashasvidhanam. Everything is owned and controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and everyone has a particular quota, but it still belongs to him. Like if you borrow something from someone to use for them, you happen to be their employee, you better use it for them. For example, if you are a chauffeur, and now I am speaking about someone who drives a car for someone else, you know, a hired driver. If you take that car that belongs to the owner, to the millionaire, or, you know, big guy, and you use it for your own aggrandizement, let's say you could decide to go to the bar that night or whatever, not that you should do that, then you're actually misusing the property of someone else. That's a really important point. So everything belongs to Krishna. We're meant to use everything for Krishna's service. Text 2. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Kutastva Kashmalamidam Vishame Samupashtitam Anarya Jishtam Asvarigyam Akirti Karamarjana. So Shri Bhagavan Vacha, the Supreme Personality of God, had said, Kuta, where from? Twa, unto you, Kashmalam, in dirtiness, Idam, this lamentation, Vishame, in this hour of crisis. Samupashtitam arrived, Anarya, persons who do not know the value of life, Jishtam, practiced by Asvargyam, which does not lead to higher planets, Akirti, infamy, Karam, the cause of Arjuna or Arjuna. Translation. The Supreme Personality of God had said, my dear Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? They are not at all befitting a man who knows the value of life. They lead not to higher planets, but to infamy. So, Srila Prabhupada explains that Krishna and the Supreme Personality of God are identical. Therefore, Lord Krishna is referred to as Bhagavan throughout the Gita. Bhagavan is the ultimate and the absolute truth. Absolute truth is realized in three phases of understanding, namely Brahman, or the impersonal, all-pervasive spirit, Paramatma, or the localized aspect of the Supreme within the heart of all living entities, and Bhagavan, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter, text 11, this conception of the absolute truth is explained thus. Vedanti tat tatva vidas tatvam yad jnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shavyate. The absolute truth is realized in three phases of understanding by the knower of the absolute truth, and all of them are identical. Such phases of the absolute truth are expressed as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. These three divine aspects can be explained by the example of the sun, which also has three different aspects, namely the sunshine, the sun surface, and the sun planet itself. One who studies the sunshine only is the preliminary student. One who understands the sun surface is further advanced, and one who can enter into the sun planet is the highest. Ordinary students who are satisfied by simply understanding the sunshine, its universal pervasiveness, and the glaring effulgence of its impersonal nature may be compared to those who can realize only the Brahman feature of the absolute truth. The student who has advanced still further can know the sun disk, which is compared to knowledge of the Paramatma feature of the absolute truth. And the student who can enter into the heart of the sun planet is compared to those who realize the personal feature of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Therefore, the bhaktas, or the transcendentalists who have realized the Bhagavan feature of the absolute truth, are the topmost transcendentalists, although all students who are engaged in the study of the absolute truth are engaged in the same subject matter. The sunshine, the sun disk, and the inner affairs of the sun planet cannot be separated from one another, yet the students of the three different phases are not in the same category. The Sanskrit word Bhagavan is explained by the great authority Parashara Muni, the father of Vyasadeva, the Supreme Personality of who possesses all riches, this is definition of Bhagavan, all strength, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge, and all renunciation is called Bhagavan. That means full of opulence is bhaga man. Man means full, bhaga means opulence. There are many persons who are very rich, very powerful, very beautiful, very famous, very learned, and very much detached, but no one can claim that he possesses all riches, all strength, etc. entirely. Only Krishna can claim this because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No living entity, including Brahma, Lord Shiva, or Narayan, can possess opulence as fully as Krishna. Therefore, it is concluded in the Brahma Sanghita by Lord Brahma himself that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No one is equal to or above him. He is the primeval Lord or Bhagawan known as Govinda, and he is the supreme cause of all causes. Ishvara Paramakrishna Sachidananda Vigraha Anadiradir Govinda Sarvakarna Karnam. There are many personalities possessing the qualities of Bhagawan, but Krishna is the supreme because none can excel him. He is the supreme person and his body is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. He is the primeval Lord Govinda and the cause of all causes. This is from the Brahma Sanghita, 5th chapter, text 1. In Bhagavatam, also, there's a list of many incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but Krishna is described as the original Personality of Godhead from whom many, many incarnations and personalities of Godhead expand. Eti Changsa Kalakpum Sa Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam Indrare Vyakulam Lokam Vidyanti Yuge Yuge. All the lists of the incarnations of Godhead submitted herewith are either plenary expansions or parts of plenary expansions of the Supreme Godhead. But Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. That's from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 3rd Chapter, text 28. Therefore, Krishna is the original personality, Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, the source of both the Supersoul and the impersonal Brahman. In the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Arjuna's lamentation for his kinsmen is certainly unbecoming, and therefore Krishna expressed his surprise with the word kuta, where from? Such impurities were never expected from a person belonging to the civilized class of man known as the Aryans. Now, that word, Aryan, was misused by Germans during World War II or before World War II, but the real meaning of Aryan means persons who know the value of life and who act in such a way as to fulfill the ultimate purpose of life. That's what it means. Not something to do with racism. The word Aryan is applicable to persons who know the value of life and have a civilization based on spiritual realization, as what Prabhupada said. Persons who are led by the material conception of life do not know that the aim of life is realization of the Absolute Truth, Vishnu or Bhagavan, and they are captivated by the external features of the material world, and therefore they do not know what liberation is. Persons who have no knowledge of liberation from material bondage are called non-Aryans. Although Arjuna was a Kshatriya, he was deviating from his prescribed duties by declining to fight. This act of cowardice is described as befitting the non-Aryans. Such deviation from duty does not help one in the progress of spiritual life, nor does it even give one the opportunity to become famous in this world. Lord Krishna did not approve of the so-called compassion of Arjuna for his kinsmen. So maybe we unpack some of that stuff there. So, first of all, Arjuna was a Kshatriya. And a Kshatriya, along with the Brahmin in the Vedic culture and the Vaishya too, they are, all these three classes are twice born, or dvija. Actually, the word dvija is a very interesting word. Dvi means two, and ja means to be born. And Prabhupada would comment that sometimes in Sanskrit you can refer to a bird as dvija too. Why can you refer to a bird as dvija? Because a bird is twice born. Once the egg pops out of the mama bird, and that's the first birth. Second birth is the egg hatches after the mama bird sits on the egg. So that's what it means by being twice born. Another explanation of twice born beyond the ritualistic ceremony of initiation is one who actually understands one's spiritual identity. And there's an interesting verse. about this. Janmana Jayate Shudra Samskara Bhavet Dvijam. Interesting. It says that everybody by birth, especially Kali Yuga, is considered Shudra. And remember, we mentioned before, Shudra means one who laments, one who is in the bodily concept of life, one who is controlled by the mode of ignorance. But then, the second part of the verse, which I just quoted, is Samskara Bhavet Dvijam. That by the proper process of samskara, one becomes twice born, or in other words, starts to understand his spiritual identity. That's what dvija means. So, what does samskara mean? Okay, samskara is basically sometimes refers to it like a reformatory practice, but basically, the word samskara means an impression. Or one associates or gets an impression from whatever one associates with. For example, if I read the news, I get an impression about what the political personalities are like. Or if you happen to watch a video, it'll impress upon your consciousness, just like if you take a mold and you mold something, let's say I take a mold of a statue. So the mold of the statue is an impression upon the substance which you're using to make the impression, clay or whatever, you know, whatever substance you're using. So when we come in contact with things, when we undergo different practices, be they material or spiritual practices, we get impressions. And these impressions are impressed upon the subtle body. Subtle body means, sometimes called astral body, lingua sharira is a Sanskrit term for it. The subtle body means the body of desires, mind, intelligence, and ego. When you're talking about the Vedic description of the eightfold material elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. In other words, your body of desires that you change, or you don't change, but you take from one life to another when you change your gross body. Now, just like the Gita also describes that one carries the conceptions of life that one has from one gross body to another, just like the air carries aroma or aromas of a particular flower from one place to another. So that's the subtle body. So these impressions are made in the subtle body. So by the samskaras, by giving the proper impressions, proper samskaras, I mean, some of them in the original Vedic literature are actually like rituals, but they're mainly, the purpose is to give an impression on the subtle body. By giving those proper impressions, one becomes twice born. And specifically, that's often referred to as the initiation. So you have the three higher classes, getting back to the point, Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, getting initiation. They're called twice born of Dvija. And they have basically the sacred thread for the men. And the women also get initiated, but they don't have the thread. It's just a ritualistic thing. The thread is not for them. It's just a sign. I am going to mute all. I have learned how to mute everybody without chastising everybody. It's pretty good. So you get the sacred thread, and Arjuna has that sacred thread, and it indicates one who's gone through the samskara, who knows better, who's on the spiritual platform. Now, being on the spiritual platform, you may have the duty of a kshatriya, you may have the duty of a brahmin, you may have the duty of a vaishya. But still, your goal is spirituality. And you stick to that goal utilizing your own particular psychophysical nature. So Arjuna has actually neglected what he learned. He has a higher status than, let's say, someone who is just a Shudra, because he's educated, he knows better, and therefore Krishna did not expect him to actually neglect his duty because of this emotional feeling, And it's interesting how Prabhupada in these different purports at particular points says is because Arjuna is a great devotee, he had these feelings. Another point it says Krishna does not approve of the so-called compassion. So you have this dichotomy, or it even appears to be a little contradiction between Prabhupada saying it's due to his being a great devotee and then because he's a great devotee, he should not be exhibiting this. Well, the point is the natural feeling can be there, but for one to actually act on the material feeling rather than using the intelligence, there we get back to the intelligence again, then that's what indicates one has slipped into a lower understanding. So one has to make the intelligence very strong. One makes the intelligence strong by understanding what's the right thing to do. As we would say, always do the right thing. And the way one understands that is through studying the Vedic literatures. And the Bhagavad Gita tells us or gives us specific instructions. And Arjuna is going to get some very specific instructions that indicate what one should do if one is bewildered. We're going to come upon those instructions in a second, and Arjuna's surrender in a second. Okay. Next verse. Klaivyam asma asma gamha parta naitatvayupapadyate kshutram radiador valyam tyaktvo tishta parantapa. So klaivyam, impotence. Masma, do not. Gamaha. Take two. Partha, O son of Pritha, na, never. Etat, this, twayi, unto you. Upapadyate is befitting, shudram peti, hridaya, of the heart, dorvalyam. Weakness, chaktwa, giving up. Utishta, get up. Param tapa, O chastiser of the enemies. Translation, O son of Pritha, do not yield to this degrading impotence. It does not become you. Give up such petty weakness of heart and arise, O chastiser of the enemy. So here, Krishna is sort of appealing not only to the higher spiritual knowledge that Arjuna should have, but he is also appealing to Arjuna's kshatriya nature. A kshatriya nature is that, as we mentioned before and probably mentioned before, is that one does always responds to a challenge. You know, you're acting like a wimp, basically. And this degrading impotence. You're just acting useless, hopeless. You know, and you have from a higher family. I mean, maybe you don't belong in that higher family. Maybe you just belong in an uneducated situation. You don't know what's good for you. All right. You know, this is very bewildering. You know, you've gone to school and learned mathematics and you don't know one is two. You know, give up this nonsense. Okay, so purport. Arjuna was addressed as the son of Pritha, who happened to be the sister of Krishna's father, Vasudeva. Therefore, Arjuna had a blood relationship with Krishna. If the son of a kshatriya declines to fight, he's a kshatriya in name only. Those are fighting words for a kshatriya. You're not a real kshatriya, you're just like an imitation kshatriya. And if the son of a Brahmin acts impiously, he's a Brahmin in name only. So in other words, one has to show the qualities to be understood to be of a particular nature. I mean, that's a no-brainer. Things equal to the same thing are equal to each other. If you show the qualities of a Brahmin, you are a Brahmin. If you show the qualities of an intelligent person, you are an intelligent person. If you show the qualities of an idiot, you are an idiot. I mean, just like sometimes someone may get an honorary degree in the university, but they may be an idiot for some reason or other. Doesn't mean that they're a scholar. So that's what it means to be a Brahmin only or a Kshatriya only. You just have this name certificate or family history, and you think that that's actually your nature. And that's one of the problems with the caste system in India. The caste system in India is not bona fide, because Krishna never advocates that someone should be ascertained to be of a particular nature according to their birth. He says a person is ascertained or understood to be a particular nature according to the nature which he exhibits. You know, if he looks like a scholar, acts like a scholar, you know, quacks like a duck, acts like a duck, it's a duck. But this caste system is, he may act like a duck, quack like a duck, but he's a buffalo. It's kind of stupid. Just because you give him a name. It's almost like that Wizard of Oz thing where the scarecrow wanted a brain and they just gave him a certificate. I don't know if anyone ever saw the Wizard of Oz, so I won't make reference to that again. So, such Kshatriyas and Brahmanas are unworthy sons of their fathers. Therefore, Krishna did not want Arjuna to become an unworthy son of a Kshatriya. Arjuna was the most intimate friend of Krishna, and Krishna was directly guiding him on the chariot. But in spite of all these credits, if Arjuna abandoned the battle, he would be committing an infamous act. Therefore, Krishna said that such an attitude in Arjuna did not fit his personality. Arjuna might argue that he would give up the battle on the grounds of his magnanimous attitude for the most respectable Bhishma and his relatives, but Krishna considered that sort of magnanimity mere weakness of heart. Such false magnanimity was not approved by any authority. Therefore, such magnanimity or so-called nonviolence should be given up by persons like Arjuna under the direct guidance of Krishna. Now, it's interesting. One thing I failed to comment on. In the beginning of this chapter, Prabhupada establishes very, very clearly who Krishna is. Now, the reason for that is very interesting, because you have to establish what is a bona fide source of knowledge. This is called epistemology. Epistemology means how do you know what you know. And our epistemology is called the descending process. And therefore, you have to get knowledge from a perfect person. And it has to be shown, first of all, that the perfect person is Krishna. And therefore, he is the best source of knowledge. Okay? So that's the establishment in the beginning of this particular chapter that Prabhupada does in his purport. And you find in Jiva Goswami's works, particularly the Shatsandarvas, he establishes in the first Shandarva, the Tattva Sandarva, our principles of how do you know, pramana, epistemology, how do you know what you know? So this is, it's actually extremely important before you start discussing any form of philosophy or even practical knowledge. How do you know what you know? For example, here's an interesting one. Some people may say the world is flat. So how do you know that? Well, it seems to be flat. Actually, where I'm living, it's not flat. Actually, there's hills all over the place. And some people actually believe it's flat. Why? Because they heard from someone else who is not a reputable authority. You know, if you hear from a reputable authority like the Vedic literatures, you'll find the earth is described as a globe in the Shurya Siddhanta, etc., like that. Or what to speak of the pratyaksha, the direct experience that people have. I'm not going to get into that. So before speaking about anything with any authority. I mean, you can say, I feel like this, I feel like that. I mean, obviously you can say, you know, I'm cold, I'm hot, whatever. But even the statement of it's cold or it's hot are not absolute statements, because it may be cold to you and hot for someone else or whatever, or vice versa. So when you're speaking about, you know, the truths, whether scientific truths or spiritual truths, you really have to understand where your knowledge is coming from. And if it's coming from Krishna, you got it made. And if it's coming from, let's say, the scientists, well, maybe true, maybe not true, because scientists are changing their theories about, especially the physicists, are changing their theories just about every other day. So when we're speaking about absolutes, it's better to receive knowledge from an absolute person. So Prabhupada establishes who that absolute person is in the beginning of this chapter. And that's why Prabhupada went so far in describing this principle of Bhagavan, the all-opulent Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if you're interested in epistemology, more study Jiva Goswami's Tattva Sandarbha. So next verse. Arjuna Uvacha Kattam Bhishmam Mahang Sankye Dronam Cha Madhusudana Ishubhi Pratyokshami Bhujarha Vari Sunana. Arjuna Vacha, Arjuna said, Katam how Bhishma, Aham, I, Sankye, and the five, Dronam, Drona, Cha also, Madhusudana, killer of Madhu, Ishubihi, with arrows, Pratiyotsyami, shall counterattack, Puja Arhau, those who are worshipable, Arisudana, O killer of the enemies. Translation. Arjuna said, O killer of enemies, O killer of Madhu, how can I counteract with arrows and battle men like Bhishma and Drona who are worthy of my worship? So, just a little explanation about the Vedic system is that older people are usually respected. This is just the culture, that if someone has an older brother, then one's supposed to listen to one's older brother or older sister. Like in the case of Lord Ramchandra, Lord Ramchandra was the boss, and Lakshman and Bart and Shatrughna listened to him. So that was the part of the culture. Older people are respected, they're considered to be repositories of knowledge, and one is not supposed to kill older people because one's supposed to protect older people. As you mentioned, the old people, the children, the women, the cows, they all have to be protected in Vedic society. Respectable superiors, Prabhupada explains, like Bhishma, the grandfather and Dronacharya, the teacher, are always worshipable. Even if they attack, they should not be counterattacked. It is general etiquette the superiors are not to be offered even a verbal fight. Even if they are sometimes harsh in behavior, they should not be harshly treated. Then how is it possible for Arjuna to counterattack them? Would Krishna ever attack his own grandfather, Ugrasena, or his teacher, Sandhivani Muni? These were some of the arguments offered by Arjuna to Krishna. I mean, like I said, the arguments are valid, but these particular teachers, in a particular situation, teacher, guru, grandfather, they lose that status by acting irreligiously. They lose that status. You know, there's overriding principles of ethics and morality. Ethics and morality are not simply rule-based. They're also situationally based. So it would be an interesting study to have someone really study, do a full analysis, a thorough analysis of ethics and morality. And, you know, when is one bound? When is one not bound? And specifically, when one actually serves Krishna, one is bound to serve Krishna, and then, let's say, debts to other aspects of society, as we mentioned in a previous class, are not really considered. Whether one has debts to demigods, debts to one's forefathers, etc., they're not considered of the same importance. So, an important thing. So Arjuna is not speaking a lie here. It's just, again, the context, the people he is speaking about. So these injunctions are not absolute injunctions. They're relative injunctions. In other words, respecting the elders is a relative injunction dependent upon how the elders act. You know, if you're, let's say if your father, give me a really bad mundane example. Let's say your father kills your brother. Should you still respect him? Not a good idea. Okay, so let's continue with this interesting discussion. Text 5. Guru Nahatva Himanubhavan Shayo Vaktam Vaksham Apila Abihaloke Advartakamam Stu Guru Nihaiva Unjiya Bogan Rudhira Pradigdan. Guru and the superiors Ahatva, not killing, he certainly, Mahanubhavan, great soul, Shreya, it is better, Bhoktum, to enjoy life, Vaiksham, by begging, Api, even, Iha, in this life, Loke, in this world, Atva, killing, Artha, again, Kaman, desiring to, but, Gurun, superiors, Iha, in this world, Eva, certainly, Bhunjiya, one has to enjoy, Vula, enjoyable things, Rudira, blood, Pradidhan, tainted with. It would be better to live in this world by begging than to live at the cost of the lives of great souls who are my teachers. Even though desiring worldly gain, they are superiors. If they are killed, everything we enjoy will be tainted with blood. So remember, here Arjuna is stressing again, enjoyment. How can I enjoy? It's tainted with blood. Well, the whole idea is not for Arjuna to enjoy, is to help Krishna establish religious principles again. Help the citizens. Punish the miscreants. Krishna himself comes down. Paritranaya saranam vidishaya tadushkritam. Purport. According to scriptural codes, a teacher engages in an abominable action and has lost his sense of discrimination, is fit to be abandoned. Bhishma and Drona were obliged to take the side of Duryodhana because of his financial assistance. We mentioned that previously, although they should not have accepted such a position simply on financial considerations. Under the circumstances, they have lost the respectability of teachers. That's the point. That was the point I just made. That if one deviates, you lose your position. It's a fact. If you're a teacher in a school and you just deviate in some way, do something abominable, you're kicked out. You're no longer a teacher. You can't get your salary anymore. That's the way it is. If a Brahmin, someone in a so-called high class, Brahmin does something abominable, he's no longer a Brahmin. He may be considered Brahma Bandhu, which means a friend or a relative of a Brahmin, but he's not a Brahmin anymore. You're known by your qualities. So they showed the qualities of Shudra, Bhishma, Drona, Kripa. They manifested themselves as Shudras because having worked under the employment of Dhritarashtra, they forsook their moral obligations, principles, ethical obligations, ethical principles for pecuniary gain. And therefore they became contaminated. They acted like Shudras. Even though they had the knowledge of a Brahmin, that's the most dangerous thing. Where someone has knowledge of a Brahmin but misuses it, doesn't have the realization or has lost the realization. Like if you have knowledge in the hands of a rascal, you can create havoc in society. Too much knowledge is a dangerous thing in the wrong hands. But certain countries, if they get the atom bomb, well, every country gets the atom bomb, it's better they don't have the knowledge of it. But Arjuna thinks that nevertheless they remain as superiors, therefore to enjoy material profits after killing them would mean to enjoy spoils tainted with blood. First of all, it's not a question of Arjuna's enjoyment. And secondly, they're no longer his superiors. They've lost the right to be his superiors. Remember that. It's not that one attains a position in society and that position is one's position regardless how one acts. One loses the right. Just like, let's talk about Nixon, who used to be president of the United States many years ago. He acted in an improper way, and he lost his right to be president, to be addressed as Mr. President. His whole life was an embarrassment after that, because he did something improper as the president of the United States. So, they lose their right. So, let's see, how much... one more text. Text 6. Nachaitad vidmad kartaram nagariyo yadva jayema yadiva no jayehu yaneva hatva na jijivishamas tevashtata pramukhe dartarastraha na nor cha also etat this vid... Do we know... Katarat, which, nah, for us, gariya, better, yatva, whether, Jayema, we may conquer, Yadi, if, Ba, or, Na, us, Jaye, Yuhu, they conquer, Yan, those who, Ava, certainly, Hatwa, by killing, Na, never, Jiji, Visha, Maha, we would want to live, Te, all of them, Avastitaha, are situated, Pramukhe, in the front, Dhritarashtraha, the sons of Dhritarashtra. Nor do we know which is better, conquering them or being conquered by them. If we kill the sons of Dhritarashtra, we should not care to live. Yet they are now standing before us on the battlefield. Purport, Arjuna did not know whether he should fight and risk unnecessary violence, although fighting is the duty of the Kshatriyas, or whether he should refrain and live by begging. If he did not conquer the enemy, begging would be his only means of subsistence, nor was there certainty of victory because either side might emerge victorious. Even if victory awaited them, and their cause was justified, still, if the sons of Dhritarashtra died in battle, it would be very difficult to live in their absence. Under the circumstances, that would be another kind of defeat for them. All these considerations by Arjuna definitely prove that not only was he a great devotee of the Lord, but he was also highly enlightened, had complete control over his mind and senses. His desire to live by begging, although he was born in the royal household, is another sign of detachment. He was truly virtuous, as these qualities combined with his faith and the words of instruction of Sri Krishna, his spiritual master, indicate. It is concluded that Arjuna was quite fit for liberation. Unless the senses are controlled, there's no chance of elevation to the platform of knowledge, and without knowledge and devotion, there's no chance of liberation. Arjuna was competent in all these attributes over and above his enormous attributes in his material relationships. So here Prabhupada again like presents the positive side of Arjuna's, you know, you see this vacillating between Prabhupada and Krishna, let's say, criticizing Arjuna, and then presenting the positive side. So there are positive aspects to Arjuna's mentality, that he's ready, for the sake of doing the right thing, to renounce everything. That's a very positive thing. But his not understanding what is the right thing, because of his being covered by sentiment, even though he should know what is the right thing, is a negative thing. So there's actually positive and negative aspects to Arjuna's mentality and desires at this particular point. So this is the point. It's interesting. It's interesting to see this vacillation in Prabhupada's descriptions. So we will end here, and tomorrow we'll continue from text 7. So does anybody have any questions? Now is your opportunity to ask some questions. That's good, Toshan Krishna. It's good to see you.
I have a question.
Okay.
So it's, I was just wondering if there was a connection between those. I was wondering if there's a connection between those five relationships that we may have with Krishna, like one of those, and then the like whether our nature is to be a Kshatriya or Brahmana, or is that just like in the material world, or is there a connection between those?
Usually no connection, because from lifetime to lifetime, like this life I may be a Brahman, next life I may be a Kshatriya, next life I may be a Shudra, next life I may be Vaishya. So there's no connection. Even in the case of Arjuna, in his one of his previous incarnations, he was a Brahman. He was the Nara and the Nara Narayan Rishi. They were twins who were sons of Dharma, and one was actually an incarnation of Krishna, and the other one was Arjuna. So there's, I would say, there's no connection between, unless, of course, we're directly in Krishna's pastimes. Let's say we take birth where Krishna is enacting his pastimes, like in Vrindavan. And in that particular instance, that will indicate our eternal nature. But right now, it doesn't matter. You know, what I am today, let's say, here I am a sannyasi, or whatever I am, and a male body, and in the spiritual world, I'm not going to say what I am, but I could be anything. I could be a coward boy. I could be a gopi. I could be one of Krishna's mothers. I could be one of Krishna's fathers. I could be, and that means Vaishya, basically. Any of these people would be Vaishyas by nature. Vaishya means like coward people and people take care of cows and farmers like that. So it doesn't, you know, if and when I go back to Godhead, most likely I'd be a Vaishya. So here I am supposedly acting like a Brahmin, but if I go back to Goloka Vrindavan, then I'll most likely be a Vaishya. Of course, there are some Brahmins around there too. But either a Vaishya lady or a Vaishya man, or maybe even a cow. Like if you go back to Godhead and you see a cow, you can say, oh, there's Gurudev. Don't I know you from before? Well, moo. So
Okay,
it's
thank
not.
you.
What's that?
I said thank you for explaining that.
Thank you for the questions. So yeah, so where we are, who we are today, is not an indication of who we are in the spiritual world, but we can realize who we are in the spiritual world, which is completely different than who we are in this world internally. But even if we realize it internally, we won't manifest it externally. I mean, for example, if I was to realize that I was a cow in the spiritual world, I don't think I would go around on all fours. Moo, moo, moo. Extremely inappropriate, and people wouldn't understand me too well. So,
They're not
oh,
Maharaj.
yeah.
Please accept my humble obeisances. This is Abhiram.
Oh, yeah, I guess that I.
How are you, Maharaj?
I'm fine. You're fine too.
Yes, Maharaj. Yeah, we are on the level two right now. That's
Oh,
the thing.
level two, yeah. We're entering into level two also, so.
Actually, Maharaj, I have a one question. In regards of the sampradayas, when we're talking about the sampradayas, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said that four are the bona fide sampradayas, like Sri Sampradaya, Madhavacharya Sampradaya, Ramanuja Sampradaya, and Nimbarkacharya Sampradaya. But
That's
then,
Kumara Sampradaya. Yeah, Kumara.
why Kumara Sampradaya? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but then, I just want to ask you, Maharaj, why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he approved all the sampradayas, but still he is much more focusing on Madhavacharya Sampradaya. Why is it like that?
I think it's why Madhvacharya? Well, Madhvacharya, he was, as you know, he taught Advaita.
Okay.
You know, the Madhvacharya Sampradaya, just to be a little specific. So, this very much is in line with Srila Prabhupada's mission. You know, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacitesha Tarani. Prabhupada came to the Western world to deal with impersonalism and voidism. So, in Kali Yuga, the whole world, not the whole world, but most of the world is actually subject to impersonal philosophy, even so-called religious people. And so Madhvacharya, as well as Ramanujacharya to a large extent too, but I think that Madhvacharya, the Tattvavadis, even more than any other sampradaya, stressed the duality, you know, because dualism,
Thank you.
stressed the duality between the Lord and the living entities. In other words, we are not God. We do not become God at any step. And you see that ferocious, almost like ferocious mood of preaching in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, where Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would go up to a impersonalist or Mayavadi and would say, if you think that everything is one, Then why are you wearing this shirt instead of a piece of cotton? And even he grabbed the guy by his shirt. So I think even though we don't strictly follow this mode of extreme dualism that Madhvacharya taught, the we don't follow the extreme philosophy of dualism that Madhvacharya taught, and our philosophy is more in tune with Ramanujacharya, Sribhasha, the Sri Sampradaya. The preaching mood to deal with impersonalism and voidism is more in the mood of Sripad Madhvacharya. Because Prabhupada, when anyone, also Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they were very ferocious when dealing with people who are impersonalists or voidists. And that's really Madhvacharya's mood. If you read about his different arguments with impersonalists and voidists, I mean, there were some people, there was a whole group of people he defeated philosophically, and they became so upset that they all committed suicide. You read the history of Madhvacharya. Yeah, he was really like really, of the four Sampradayas, I would say he's the most ferocious preacher. Ferocious preacher, I mean, and also, he was Vayuputra. He was the son of Vayu, the wind god, and he had great strength too. And Madhvacharya. Anyway, he's actually a direct disciple of Srila Vyasadeva too. Because Madhvacharya, by dint of his spiritual ability, was able to ascend to the higher regions of the universe and meet with Srila Vyasadeva. And he showed Vyasadeva his commentary on the Vedanta Sutra and also his commentary on Bhagavad Gita. So these are very unique circumstances in the life of Sripad Madhvacharya. Madhvacharya took sannyas like when he was 9 years old. It's an interesting story. I mean, I don't have time to tell the life story of Madhvacharya, but it's very, he has a very interesting life story. Okay?
Okay.
That's a good question. One which I had not had before.
Gurudev.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Praneshra.
Yes. Gurudev, like sometime due to circumstances.
Yeah.
Yeah, due to some people be in proper way. So, what are the
You
dimensions
want
to
to broke
check
up. What
ourselves
did you
before
say? Due to
behaving
circumstances, it's impossible to do what?
in a to behave in a proper way,
Why?
like to speak like very like like because the people is not very much favorable,
Yeah, that's
and
right.
he is
Sometimes.
not like responding well, so he's unable to control the.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes we have to act in a way to accomplish something material for Krishna that we wouldn't ordinarily do, right? That's just practical.
Then what are the dimensions to check ourselves so we should be behave proper in a adverse circumstances also?
Yes, I think we should be always behave properly. We have to learn
Then
how to
what are the
control.
dimensions, Gurudev?
What?
What are the dimensions to check ourselves before acting, or
Well,
before behave?
the main way to do it is to think before you act, or look before you leap.
Yes.
Take a few deep breaths, go to sleep before sending that email. And then you'll actually be happy that you didn't send it the next morning. I think it was Benjamin Franklin in the United States who said something like that, or some politician who said, if you're going to send any sort of heavy statement in a letter, of course he didn't use email, put it in your drawer, go to sleep, and wake up the next morning and rip it up. Look before you leap, okay?
Yes, brother.
Okay. Another question. Who else has a question here? All right. It looks like.
Dhanvat Pranam, Maharaj, one more question, if you can give me a few minutes.
Yeah, another question.
I ask it. Yeah.
Sure.
So, Maharaj, in regards of the same Madhavacharya Sampradaya, so this entire Sampradaya basically, or our teachings of the Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam or Chaitanya Charitamrita, basically based on the one and different philosophy, which is also known as Achinta Bheda Bhed philosophy?
No, Madhvacharya didn't teach Achinta Bheda Bhed philosophy. He taught extreme dualism. Ramanujacharya and his Vishishtadvaita, you're getting a little technical now, but his philosophy was basically more akin to Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy. But Madhvacharya taught extreme dualism. And the reason Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and our acharyas are in that disciplic succession is because we are very much stressing in this age of Kali where people are prone to impersonalism and voidism.
Okay.
You know, so we're soldiers. Soldiers in the sense of not hurting anybody, but soldiers in the sense of defending God as a person. He is a person. And there's a difference between God, Krishna, and his energies. There's a difference between the energies, Krishna, and the jiva soul. And there's a difference between each other. We have differences. I'm not you and you're not me. But you'll find very prominent in many religions and spiritual paths this whole philosophy that God is, we were talking about this morning, God is love, or God is energy, or God is ephemeral, or God is impersonal. I mean, I've had a lot of discussions with people from different religions, and generally, they come to the conclusion, generally, not in every case, that God doesn't have a specific individual personality. Whereas Madhvacharya was very strong on that point. But Madhvacharya did not teach Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva, no.
Okay.
He taught difference, Dvaita. He was, you always see a picture of him with a, not Dvaita. Victory sign, you know, but two. There's a difference between the Lord and the living entities.
Okay. So do we also have to believe on this one and different philosophy, Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva?
You don't have to. It just makes sense. I mean, you know, who's going to force you to believe it? You know, belief is your desire, your choice. But I definitely accept Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy because that was taught by Lord Chaitanya, and it makes sense that we have the same nature as God, but we're different than God.
Okay.
In one sense, everything is God because everything comes from him. Just like if you see me driving my car, you'll say, there goes Vir Krishna Maharaj.
Yeah.
So I'm, one sense, I'm in the car, the same with the car, but I'm also different than the car. So Krishna is the same, in one sense, as his energies. And read the ninth, well, in a few months we'll get up to the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which deals more or less with this Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy. Where Krishna, anyway, I'm not going to go through the ninth chapter. Now, the beginning of the ninth chapter has many, many verses where Krishna says, you know, I'm here, but I'm not here. I'm pervading everything. All things are in me, but I'm not in them. And so he deals with this Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy. And I think that's probably over the head for most of the people who are attending this. But you can read more about it. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and you could look it up, Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva versus Madhvacharya's teaching or versus Ramanujacharya's teachings.
Okay.
The teachings of the four acharyas.
Thanks very much, Maharaj.
We have to end now. I have a devotee I'm trying to save from Fiji right now, trying to get him back home, so I got to work on his ticket. It's Adi Purusha, so some of you may know. So I'm just like working with him to get him back to home, back, not back to Godhead, back to the U.S. So hopefully we got a chance of a flight tomorrow for him out of Fiji that we're pushing right now. So I got to get to work on that. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Yeah.